Hey, what's up, man? Hey,
how's it going?
Oh, the fellow,
Michael. Hey, how's it going, Michael?
This is so cool.
Hola.
Amazing.
Oh, sí, te gustó? Muy bueno, muy bueno.
What's up, man?
Should we just pick these up and start taking selfies?
Wow. All right. So I'm going to get things started. And Kevin, I'm going to start with you.
That's awesome.
What was it about the character of Ant-Man that you thought he would be an excellent addition to the MCU?
Well, you know, clearly Ant-Man in the comics is a founding member of the Avengers. I've said that we have a big, giant poster of Avengers number one that has been in all of the various offices we've had over the years. And I love looking at that and checking off if, yeah, that person's been in a movie now. We made a movie about that person, maybe a movie about that person. Ant-Man and Wasp are the two that have been the longest that we haven't done anything with. And so it was always clear that we were gonna assemble all the Avengers eventually. And it also was interesting to do a movie, now that you've seen it, I think most of you in this room have seen it, that plays with scale and that plays with action in a very different way than we've ever done before. And as I'm sure you all have heard me say many, many times, I like it when all of our films are unique and all of them are different and all of them can surprise people. Now this is our 12th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So it felt time to something even more unique,
really?
And even more different, which I think
you sort of a bitches.
I mean, Peyton, how intimidating is that when you come in and you hear Kevin say, like, we're going to play with scale, we're going to do something different, we're going to break from the traditional Marvel mold with this project?
Yeah, I had no idea what Kevin was talking about. Well, it's, you know, there's a high bar with these Marvel movies, and one of the things that I really discovered working with Marvel, which I loved, was they have a creative hunger, and they don't, I'm putting words in your mouth, Kevin, but they really don't want to repeat themselves. And they, you know, encourage these movies to be really idiosyncratic. And one of the things I love about Ant-Man is that it's a pretty weird movie in a great way. I mean, it was allowed to be weird, and that was fantastic. Mm. So, you know, there was a high bar there. So it kind of energizes everybody.
Paul, what was it about the character and sort of the opportunity afforded to you through this film that excited you?
Well, there was a lot, but, you know, the first thing was that
me.
It was different than anything.
Mainly me.
It's Evangeline.
And then it's a Marvel movie. Come on. Yeah, let's be honest.
The fact that it was different than anything that I'd ever done. I liked the challenge. I thought it would be an exciting adventure. And I enjoyed the fact that when I was cast, people went, huh? Really? You wouldn't necessarily think that. And I think that Marvel likes to do that. And I was thrilled to have the opportunity.
We would love to open it up to questions now, so we're going to start right this way, and we'll bring it up.
This is working. All right, how are you? Congratulations.
Hi.
To all of you. The movie's so entertaining, so much fun. Great to watch. I wanted to ask you, how did you prepare the role? Did you go back to the source material? Was it all in the script? Were you a fan of the character before?
Growing up, I really didn't know the character. And I did, before we ever started shooting, read the comics, tried to do a little bit of research, and then just kind of get into the mindset as much as possible. There was also all of the physical stuff that I wanted to kind of throw myself into to feel as if I could play the part and not only be convincing, but just help me feel the part more.
Did you enjoy being ripped?
I enjoyed being able to do shoulder rolls and kind of,
because there was one shot where, like, you thoroughly enjoyed being ripped.
I was very self-conscious during that.
Yeah. Like, overly self-conscious. Like, look at me, bro.
What you had for lunch that day, we shot your abs. You had one almond.
and one piece of rice.
So bloated.
Thank you. We're going to our next question right over here on the right.
Hi, Paul. So I read a funny thing that your 9-year-old that cool when you said that you're
going to
play Ant-Man. Has he seen it yet, and has that been redeemed?
There was nothing to redeem. What
kind of fucking...
My kid, more than anything, likes to make me laugh. So when I told him that, even at 9 years old, he has such a funny sense of humor. That's what he said. But this is the first time. It's the first thing I've ever done, ever. that he is like legitimately jazzed about. He can see it, his friends know about it. And we were at Disneyland like 2 days ago, and they have a kind of a sneak preview of this Ant-Man event that's there. And we went there, and I was sitting next to him. And to see, like, as a parent, the look on my kid's face when he's watching this, and I'll never forget, it's like as soon as it ended, he just looked at me. He's like, that's awesome. And every time a commercial is on, he's like, Dad. And he's so excited. And, like, I've never experienced that. And so it's so cool to be able to share this with my own family, especially my son.
Thank you. That's awesome. Next question over here.
Hi, Neela from Australia. Evangeline, without wanting to spoil or anything, there's a moment in.
Yeah, right. They all start that way. And then they spoil away.
Yeah, I don't mean to be controversial. But
when you say it's about damn time, I wonder if you feel you're speaking for all womankind.
Amen and touche, sister. I think that there is a lot of excitement in the focus groups that we've seen already with the female audiences about this character in general, and about the fact that Marvel are really, really taking female characters very seriously and looking at their lineup. You can see that they have great intentions. And as a woman who came into a predominantly male film, I had a great time working with Peyton and with the producers on this character, because I could see a hunger in them to really, really do right by Hope and do right by their female fans and the female audience. And, you know, when I pick a role, one of the things that I aspire to is that somebody's parent will come up to me after the films come out and say, my daughter idealizes that character. You're her hero. And that's what we aim for, especially in this brand, right? We're in the business of making heroes.
Next question will be right here.
Mr. Douglas, I wanted to ask you.
Mr. Douglas.
I'll talk a little bit. Way over here on the side. Oh, a little bit over this way. Paul talked about being a hero for his kids, now being Ant-Man. And I was just wondering for you, did this kind of boost your stature with your own kids?
My 14-year-old's reaction was like an agent. He said, you know, Dad, this could be a whole new audience for you. So I took that to heart, and here I am.
Thank you. The next question will be right over there.
Hi. The film is thoroughly enjoyable and really funny. Michael Peña, you had a lot to do.
Tee! Woo!
You were hilarious. Is this all that on the page, or did you bring in some of the...
None of that was on the page. He wouldn't shut up.
Yeah, I basically wouldn't shut up. No, it was, you know, Peyton and Paul that were fantastic. I mean, no, literally, the first day of shooting, I was like scared out of my pants. Because I'm like, I've been reading Marvel comics. Like, you know, like there's a thing with Marvel, like where they do, like, you know, for like, there's a one stage, you know, for my kid that was 1 year old. And then all of a sudden, like, it gets a bit more sophisticated as time goes on. And so my son is like, don't mess this up, Dad. And so I was like thoroughly, really nervous, because like I want to be the cool dad. But like it was really loose on set. And it was actually like, you know, because I was a nervous wreck. And Paul, he's like, you know, just do what you want, man. Let's do things. Let's explore and let's have fun. And like, and after the first week, it got to be a lot of fun. So like when it's too much fun, you don't know what kind of movie it was. Thank God, you know, Peyton, you did all right.
I mean, T.I. and David, you guys are really part of that huge comedic element that gets injected to the film along with Michael. Can you talk a little bit about what excited you about being the ones to bring the funny in Ant-Man?
Terrifying at first for me, because that's not the zone that I'm the most comfortable playing in. And then you get to show up and you're with these guys. Oh my God, I was terrified. And it was I'm a lifelonger comic, you know, fan, and so I thought like all my knowledge of what I know about comic books is going to go into informing my character. This is a totally new character that isn't part of that world. So it was a blast. And I showed up the first day, and I learned quickly that I just needed to hold on. And the guys are so generous, Peyton and Paul and Michael and T.I. and everybody in the film, but they just kept throwing me the ball and giving me an opportunity to play. And as long as I didn't break, that was became my biggest challenge, because these guys are so funny, and I would hold my knees under
you
the table.
You did fart a couple times.
I did, a couple times. But that's like a relaxing technique. Fart joke. It's, you know? It's an old theater thing from you know, Spolin. But I just try not to break. It was an amazing experience.
Why is that always funny?
I was really just happy and enthused to be a part of it. I mean, just to be introduced into the Marvel Universe and to be a part of such a, I mean, just a stacked franchise, a cast of, you know, so many, you know, well-trained and highly skilled actors and actresses, or actress.
I know.
I wanted to not mess it up, just come in and contribute however I can, man, to the film. And, you know, and Paul's an incredible leader, and Michael's just the right amount of a a-hole to where it comes off great on screen. You know what I'm saying?
And, thanks, bro. Yeah, it means a lot.
Anytime, dude. And Peyton, man, you know, Peyton really, really set an awesome environment for us to be creative and, you know, just do what we felt was right for the scenes. And of course, with the legendary Michael Douglas, finding out that we have the same birthday. What's up, 925? How you doing?
925.
There you go. But you know, just it's so many awesome and amazing experiences that I will take with me from this point forward for the rest of my career. I appreciate the opportunity.
Are we gonna go to our next question right here on your left?
Hi, my question is for Mr. Douglas. Do you have Hank Pym's portrait hanging above your fireplace? And for Mr. Rudd, it's been, when this movie opens, it will be almost 20 years to the date since Clueless came out. And I can
imagine
quite
a
journey.
Sorry.
From,
big fan. I was a big fan of the movie. I was a big fan of the movie, I'm not going to lie. Alicia Silverstone, are you kidding me?
Portrait.
Like, let's be honest. With the little...
Well, I did not have any space, so I bought a new house. And
what was the Clueless question? I'm so sorry.
20 years since. Oh, sorry. You go ahead.
Yeah, 20 years since Clueless, going from relative discovery to leading man status has got to be quite a journey for you.
I think that there's just, I have. Gratitude and am so appreciative that I've been able to continue to work doing something that I love, and not only doing something that I love, but working on movies that I've loved. You know, I always try and keep that kind of saying, I want to work on things that I would want to see, and for a large part of my career, the vast majority, that's been true, and I'm just very, very appreciative of that.
Who didn't have a crush on Paul Rudd in Clueless? Can I just ask that question? Anybody?
How dreamy was he in that movie?
He was so dreamy.
I mean, I'm not going to lie.
Man, it's just like,
I know,
wow.
It's crazy. I fell in love with me. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
We're going to take our next question over on your left.
Yes, this is for Corey and Paul. I love the suits, the yellow jacket and the Ant-Man suits. So can you talk a bit about, was it comfortable wearing it, and how much did you have to slim down, or what food did you have to give up in order to fit into that suit? Corey and Paul.
Corey, you want to take that one first?
Well, you know, we tried to make it a practical suit. We went through several iterations, and it just was not working. And so in the end, it was completely CGI. And of course, I had been working out like a fiend to be able to look good in the suit. And in the end, it just turned out to be for the behind the stage, behind the scenes footage of me in the, you know, my pajamas.
We're gonna put a piece for the DVD and Blu-ray that's just shots of Corey in his motion capture suit. It really looks
slightly
like
less intimidating.
Corey's suit today. Very nice.
Yeah. That's all computer generated. I'm biased because I love the suit, and I think it's the coolest looking suit of all of them, and I loved wearing it. It was not that uncomfortable. And
wear it all the time. Dude. It was kind of annoying.
Even on my days off.
Karaoke?
That's right. It helped me feel the part. You know, there's something that happens when you get in that thing that... It's inevitable. I would stand differently. I would feel different. I'd feel like... Ant-Man in that thing. And
even though he looked like a total dork.
And
I'm like, you can take it off now, bro.
You know, they keep the sound stages a little bit cooler because it, you know, it doesn't really breathe that well, but it was cool. I would just sometimes catch myself as I went, oh, God, this thing is amazing looking. And as far as, like, you know, getting skinnier to try and fit it, and I mean I didn't eat anything for about a year. I worked out all the time. I took that Chris Pratt approach, which is just basically eliminate anything fun for about a year, and that's a good way to prepare to play a superhero. And again, it also helped me feel the part, which is I kind of got into that aspect as well.
Thank you. Thanks. We're going to take our next question over here. Hi, my question is for Mr. Stolt. I think that one of the movie's strongest points is Yellow Jacket. And I was wondering if you were nervous or anxious about the character, because Marvel has shown some great feelings on the past years. So
I would have moments of terror, you know, realizing, you know, what a huge audience there was, and what a huge, incredibly passionate and well-informed audience there is. But it was just too much fun. Every day I came on the set, there was some new piece of art that Peyton would show me, or I would step onto the Pimtex set and see the size of it, and you know, it was just all these dreams of you know, 15-year-old Corey being realized. And then there's this, you know, and even the civilian costumes that he wears are so outrageously villainous. I had to stop myself grinning from ear to ear every day. It was awesome.
We're gonna take our next question on your left.
First of all, congratulations, all of you. A word I've met in the Tony Marvel film is adorable.
Aww.
And let's face it, ants are adorable.
They're adorable.
As they're portrayed here. So I want to ask Kevin, Peyton, and Paul, since you did rewrites and were involved in this, your research as to the science aspect with the ants, how much research did you do? And then how difficult was it in the visual portrayal of the various types of ants and their various duties and jobs?
I'll start. There's a definitive ant textbook that's written by this guy, Edward Wilson, who's considered the ant man.
New York Times bestseller.
Yeah, New York Times bestseller. I mean, but it talks about all the specific types of ants there are in the world, and there are thousands of them, but also their specific skill sets. So one of the things that I loved about the movie is that we introduce, you know, at least four of these specific types of ants. If you ask Evangeline Lilly, she can tell you the Latin names for all of these ants.
Really?
Only mispronounced.
But it was fun because it's a heist movie, you know, at its core. And instead of sort of like, here's the guys doing this and this and this, it's like, well, here are the ants that are doing this, here are the ants that are doing that. And I guarantee that's something that you've never seen in a movie before. You know, and people talk about the shrinking when they talk about Ant-Man. But it's the other power, the being able to control ants, that's the weirder power that I think is going to really surprise people in the movie. So one of the things I liked about doing research was all the things that we have the ants do. You know, for example, the fire ants, they're architects. They can make little rafts and ladders. They do that in real life. So, you know, the kid in me was like, oh, I can go on the internet and, you know, look at these ants, and it's actually real. I think that's a really cool aspect of the movie.
This question is for Paul. I'm over in the middle. In the middle. Hi.
Oh, there you are.
Hey.
Hello.
If Ant-Man could be the Jiminy Cricket to any of the Avengers, who would it be, and what would you advise them to do as their conduit?
It's a loaded question.
If Ant-Man could be the Jiminy Cricket to any of the Avengers, and then
I think you should help the Hulk calm down when he's big.
Kind of what I was thinking. That's actually the first thing that kind of popped into my mind. I didn't hear the second part of the question.
Well, he's like the conscience of Pinocchio, so whose conscience would you want to be, or like guidance?
Well, I think that
he's a
filming.
Yeah, there's the physical side that you would think the Hulk, and then there's also, I think Scott Lang shares a passion for science and technology that Tony Stark has. I think, you know, and then he also has very specific feelings toward them as a whole, because he's learning a little bit about them, even though he's aware of their presence, from Hank Pym, so, who has very specific opinions. I'd say Hulk, though, like you
sorry.
Said.
Sorry, right, no, I totally blew it. I totally blew it.
I don't even know what the question was.
Hulk.
I'm not going to lie.
Thank you. We're going to take our next question over.
Hulk for 500.
When are you gonna see Ant Woman?
Well, there's
Wasp.
I'm gonna say there's not an Ant Woman, but maybe there is somewhere in the comics. But there is a Wasp, and if you stay through the credits of the movie, there's a chance you see something.
Damn.
But you know, somebody already asked about
hashtag spoiler alert.
You know, we have plans for her in the future, and we see that. Not so subtly in this film.
Can I just say I'm so glad you asked Kevin and not me?
Paul, two quick questions. One, all superheroes seem to land. There's that one lead landing that they make when they jump off a building or something. Is that something that has to be taught, or is it still natural? And secondly, did it give you the fact that you had this father-daughter storyline that was going on? Did that give you another level to play with this character?
Well, the first question. I found that whenever I would, in research, jump off of buildings, that's the natural way that I land. In regard to the father-daughter aspect, it was the thing that I hung the whole thing on. I, you could have a movie that has amazing effects, and this certainly has that, and brilliant visuals, a lot of action, humor, whatever. But whenever you see something that you can connect to, that's emotionally resonant, it stays with you in a very different way. I think that's the key to any movie, and that's what I thought about throughout this whole film. This is what the movie is about.
We'll take our next question, Dead Center.
Hi, Jim McCorder with Geek Dad. Mr. Douglas, I'm gonna go there. Hank Pym in the comics is a really damaged guy with a lot of really unfortunate history. And I'm wondering, in your research and preparing the role, how much of that damage plays into your mindset in playing the character? And you know what I'm talking about.
Well, are you suggesting typecasting? I think elements. I mean, I was not familiar with Ant-Man before this movie, and Kevin and Marvel were kind enough to send me about 2 years of comic books when I read the script to kind of catch up.
I didn't get comic books.
On this history and background. And I think there's echoes certainly of his the loss of his wife and the distance between he and his stunning daughter, played by Evangeline. So I think there's remnants and elements of that. I think we'll want to dwell on if it kind of pays off a little later in the picture.
We'll take our next question over here on the far right.
Hey, from Entertainment Affair. This is for the producer and the director, and Paul, if you want to jump in later too. The father-daughter relationship is a very important element in the movie, and I was wondering how did you arrive at that, the storyline, and can you talk a little bit about keeping the film funny and upbeat without losing the premise of the story?
Well, that's it right out of the comics. Scott Lang's character has a daughter named Cassie in the comics, and in his original origin story. In the books, it's tied directly to his desire to help his daughter, and that's the reason he sort of resorts to crime to try to do that. So that came right out of the comics. And as I said earlier, we've never had a hero in any of the 11 films leading up to this whose motivation involved a child or involved a son or a daughter. So that felt, again, like a reason to do this film now, which was very very meaningful for us.
One of the things that I loved from the beginning, and it is very different than the other Marvel movies in that way, is that one of the strengths of the movie, I think, is these dual stories about these two fathers and their daughters. And in various different ways. They are not a part of their daughter's lives, and they have to, by the end of the movie, repair those relationships. And in the case of Hank Pym and Ho Van Dyne, they're not going to succeed in this heist unless they repair that relationship. It's an important thing that has to happen before they succeed. And I liked sort of the intimacy of that that thematic in the movie.
Yeah, I agree. I also think there's an interesting kind of father-son dynamic with Darren and Hank. So this whole idea of parents and children runs throughout the movie, and I think makes it one of the really the
even
most
with,
relatable.
Even yeah, with Bobby Cannavale's character and Cassie, I thought that was really cool that there was also the stepfather and the daughter relationship that was being
and Anthony.
Definitely for me, it was having
everyone
totally
forgets
central
Anthony
because they're, you know, through the different drafts of the script, playing with motivations, and I think we really came to the realization that there are, you know, Darren is after the glory of the scientific discovery and the money and the fame and the power, but in the end, it really comes down to the sort of small little boy inside that just wants his father's approval, and that's so much easier to play than desire for world domination. I can relate to that
speak
more.
Speak for yourself.
We'll take our next question right in the front.
For Anthony, you talked about this a little bit before, but it's pretty clear in watching the movie that Hope stands out as by far the biggest badass in the entire film.
Yep.
So in having an opportunity to play a character where you're never sitting in distress waiting to be saved by someone else, can you talk about actually getting to play someone who's a full-on superhero even without a costume already, and the example that kind of sets for the girls who are watching the movie looking for someone else to relate to?
That was the most exciting thing for me about the role. And, you know, of course, while we were filming and during post-production, there was a lot of buzz on the internet. Is you know, Evangeline playing the Wasp, and is she a superhero? And I had a lot of questions directed my way about that. And I just couldn't have felt more comfortable or more happy saying, actually, she is just a really capable, very powerful force to be reckoned with, and she doesn't have a superpower, and she doesn't put on a fancy suit and look dorky in it. And she has, you know, I was my super suit was my power suit that I would go to work in and be a high-level scientist and the, you know, on the chair of the board of a very, very powerful corporation. And I do think that's a fantastic example for young women. And Marvel are actually doing this incredible campaign right now where they've put out a competition to young women in America to create scientific gadget projects, and they're promoting the math and sciences for young women and young girls. And they've put a lot of heart and love into that, and they did it a couple years ago also, or last year was it? And I was happy to be the face for that campaign, you know, playing the role of a female scientist in a world where mostly scientists are men is a great role to play.
We'll take our next question. Here was back. All right.
But real quick, this is for Peyton. The movie features some incredibly unique action sequences that are definitely different than most films in terms of, especially all the Marvel films, because of we're dealing with an ant-sized environment. Besides the ants being definitely a big challenge, what was the other challenge with dealing with this small environment? And then real quick, also for Paul, is Kansas City going to win the World Series?
Oh.
Paul, start.
Really
did. That's a real question. That's a...
Yep.
Right? Holding each other?
In terms of the shrinking, you know, I went back and watched all the shrinking movies. There's a long cinematic history of shrinking, Incredible Shrinking Man, Incredible Shrinking Woman, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, of course. Honey, I Shrunk the Audience pre-show at Disney. No one? all of them. But, you know, we were making sort of what would be the definitive shrinking movie of 2015, and the sort of drum I kept banging was it's got to look photorealistic. We can't have a movie where, you know, when you're in the normal world, it's realistic, and when you go down, it feels like an animated movie. It had to look photorealistic. And Jake Morrison, who's our visual effects supervisor, we spent a lot of time together, and talked about how we were going to achieve it and how we were going to shoot it. And, you know, what lenses we use, what does the world look and sound like when you're down there? You know, when you see dust particles floating around, how does the light play? And I'm really, really happy with where we ended up, because it was, you know, in a movie like Ant-Man, it's got to look real. And that applied to the ants, too. I mean, that was really one of the challenges, is creating ants that looked photoreal, but also giving them some real character. And particularly in the case of Anthony, Pena, I know you're happy with that shout out.
It's good.
A big Anthony fan.
Anthony, it's Anthony, by the
way. The idea that we, you know, we're going to create sort of a Roy Rogers Trigger or you know, Lone Ranger Silver relationship between Ant-Man, because in the comics, that's one of the iconic images, is Ant-Man flying around on an ant. And, you know, I wanted to embrace that. So I was thrilled with where we ended up in the visual effects. And again, one of the things about Marvel is you're just surrounded by the top people, you know, in all the fields. But in visual effects, they just did some amazing, amazing work.
Can I add to that question? I'm wondering, you said photorealism. What about sound realism? How do you know what ants sound like?
Well, this is great. You know, we did a Dolby Atmos mix, because we really wanted
to know.
Sorry.
When we shrink down, you want to really immerse the audience in this. And you know, sound becomes even more immersive, and it surrounds you when you're small. I know, I've been there. but we, you know, we also really had to sort of create kind of an ant language, and it was important, particularly in that bond with Anthony and with Scott Lang, to have a sound. And so, you know, the geniuses at Skywalker Sound, you know, we started auditioning and combining these sounds, and they kind of came up with a language. I don't know if there's an actual specific language that you could decode, but please try.
Thank you. We'll take our next question over here in the front on the left.
Okay. I think one thing a lot of people are overlooking or not mentioning is this is probably the funniest Marvel movie I've ever seen. I mean, it from the beginning to end, whether it's the visual comedy or like the size of just the dialogue or Michael's riffs, it's just amazingly funny. I was chuckling through the whole thing. And I guess it's a two-part question. One for Kevin. I mean, was that absolutely a goal, especially in light with the timing after a darker film like Ultron, to have a really funny film following that? And then for Peyton and Michael, I mean, to get that, some of those riffs down where Michael's going off and you're doing a montage and they're mouthing his words and the whole audience is laughing through the whole thing. I mean, it's just a riot. I mean, and if it didn't work, it comes off as silly and flat and people would complain about it, but it works.
Thanks,
you know,
man.
The risk.
Jesus Christ.
Really up there. I think it's the type of thing that probably want to go see that again just to laugh. Forget about even the effects. So, you know, besides just that, I mean, if you want to comment on that.
Well, I don't think we said that because this would be, you know, this would be our funniest movie or this is a comedy. I don't look at any of our films as isn't necessarily one thing, but humor, as we always say, is a huge element. And when you're dealing with a concept, people riding ants, people communicating ants, calling ants Anthony, you have to acknowledge to the audience that we know this is funny to a certain extent. And even when we cast Paul, people thought, is it a comedy because you cast the comedian? We cast the guy we thought could be a kick-ass superhero who happens to be funny.
And is not a comedian, he's an actor.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very good at it. In terms of coming off of Ultron,
where'd you go to school?
This panel is good for my head. He's so good looking, too.
Hey-o!
Sorry. When we put these two films together in this year, it was always knowing that one could be the antidote to the other. That coming off of Ultron, being as sort of gargantuan an exercise as it was, that it would be fun to do something, yes, that was funny, but also dealt in a very different scale, had the same kind of, hopefully, thrills and action elements, but in a very different way. So it's a flying country in one film, and it's a little girl's bedroom in another film.
In terms of these, what we call the tip montages that Mike did, you know, it's always been a heist movie. That's part of it, the DNA of the movie. And, you know, when Paul and Adam McKay were working on the rewrites, that was one of the things we looked at, is like, how can we bolster sort of the heist language in terms of the way we shoot and write the movie. And one of the things, you know, that's sort of a key element in these heist movies is the tip, you know, okay, tell me about that tip. I need to know that it's legitimate. And so when we were working with Michael, we like the idea of creating this character who was, he's a very excitable guy. He's a very sweet character, you know, he's kind of
It's a real person, by the way, that I'm imitating. His name is Pablo. He's a criminal. Not bullshitting at all. Like, the guy lives in Chicago. My best friend just flew in, you know, for the premiere. And he's in and out of jail. He's the kind of guy, swore to God, when I'm like, what'd you do this weekend? He's like, I went to jail, dog. Like, who really says that for a weekend trip? You know what I mean? Like, some people go to Estonia, whatever. But I, you know what? In actuality, I'm like, I think it's like, you know, I feel like I got lucky with those scenes because they literally give them to me, like, the pages, like, the night before. And so I didn't really know, you know, the story very much, so...
We're just in the middle of a press conference right now. Contact, okay? Thanks.
Well, I don't know your passcode, but get the rest of the tape from one of your friends.
That's what you get when you're part of the entourage.
But yeah, Luis had always been in the script, but I think one of the things that Paula and Adam McKay added was, one of the first scenes that they wrote was Luis serving waffles to the other guys. Oh. And the idea that he's sort of this father figure to these guys, he really takes care of his you know, his criminal buddies. They're kind of...
Makes sense, though, because it's cheap.
Yeah,
you know, it's almost like ramen.
Really into waffles.
and then it just grew from there. The idea that, you know, he loves fine wines and he loves expressionist art, and like he's got this very...
I know, but how did you guys like, you know, go from art, fine wine, waffles?
Waffles came first.
But yeah, that was something that Adam and Paul added, and we built on through the shooting, and we just liked the idea of making it kinetic and feel like a heist movie. But that Luis's tips were not always solid, and he tends to ramble as he tells these stories because he's very excitable.
Awesome. Well, I cannot think of a better place to say thank you to all of you. Thank you to T.I., David, Michael, Evangeline, Paul, Peyton, Michael, Corey, and Kevin for being here today. And everyone else, enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.